Hello, everybody. After a six-month hiatus due to a global pandemic, this podcast is officially back in business. Honestly, the onset of COVID-19 had me in a state of shock that manifested in many ways. Talking about what a lovable goof Mr. Furley was or how much of a pig Larry was just didn't seem that important to relay. I've been somewhat frozen in carbonite, as has this podcast, but life goes on. And as we slowly try to restart our lives, I'm slowly trying to restart this podcast. My other podcast, however, the official Danko Jones podcast, has actually gone weekly, and I'm spending more of my time on that. So credit today's guest, Kieran Grant, for reaching out to me and asking when this damn thing will be back on its feet. And so screw it. Let's do it. It does help bright up a dreary day finding out what the kids in apartment 201 are up to again. So to offset any more bad news about COVID, racial unrest, or murder hornets, let's get the Regal Beagle podcast back on its feet. So here we go. Thanks, Kieran. Here we go. Let's go.
Come and knock on our door.
Kisses are hers and hers and his, three's company too.
Come and dance on our floor.
Come and dance on our floor.
Take a step.
Thank you for knocking on our door and welcome to the Regal Beagle podcast, a podcast dedicated to the much-loved television sitcom Three's Company. Here we review and discuss each and every Three's Company episode covering all 8 seasons in chronological order. My name is Danko Jones, and joining me today is my good friend, Kieran Grant. Kieran, how are you today?
I am doing okay. I am doing quite well under the circumstances, I would say. And I'm so happy to be back. I'm so happy to be back in the Beagle.
Well, you know, the Regal Beagle podcast has been on hiatus for 4 months. And I've had people reach out to me on Twitter and even Instagram and messaged me and asking me when, if it ever will be coming back. And I never really replied. I just would say something, it's coming. But really, the truth is I was in COVID shock for 4 months. I really couldn't bring myself to reach out to anyone to do any podcasts. I was not in the mood. I was just focused on my other Danko Jones podcast, which is nothing to do with Three's Company. It was the only thing that was keeping my mind busy. But you emailed me out of the blue, and just you are the reason why I have brought the Regal Beagle back to life in this kind of COVID world that we live in. And all credit to you, Kieran.
Well, it's a distinct honor, and I hold it proudly. And I will say that it was all because I had been thinking about it. I really genuinely had been meaning to reach out and ask. And then I stumbled across a supercut on a certain, I'll call it YouTube. And I thought, well, I need to talk to Danko about this particular supercut. And then next thing you know, we had an episode.
Well, you were the one. You know what? You threw it out at me, and I said, let's do this. I mean, the shock is kind of wearing off at this point, 4 months in. I will say that. But I mean, back in March and April, I was not in the mood to reminisce about the wonderful Three's Company world.
No, neither was I. And I went into a MASH phase, which is that became. It really is true. Like, I started rewatching MASH and trying to watch movies. I watched a lot of movies for a long time. Almost every night I would watch movies. And I think 201, they were all movies I'd seen at some point before. But I was like watching two shows, MASH and The Greatest American Hero.
Those
two. And I got to say, Greatest American Hero so far hasn't aged that well, which surprised me. But probably shouldn't have surprised me, but it did. Nevertheless, MASH, you know, it's MASH. So.
I haven't thought of The Greatest American Hero in years.
I've only thought of the theme song, and then anytime I ever see the movie Carrie, I see William Catt, and I think,
of course,
the greatest. Also bears a distinct resemblance to my uncle, So whenever I see him, I'm like, oh, he reminds me of my uncle.
Okay.
When my uncle was young.
Right. Well, I mean, I remember when I was in grade school, and I have a memory of being excited that a new episode of The Greatest American Hero was going to be on that night.
Yeah.
And we'd see the commercials promoing the new episode coming up that week.
It's funny. I remember the promos almost better than the episodes.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much about that show that is just sort of etched into my memory, and it's all little highlights, and you know, the fact that he couldn't control the suit. So there's no real episode that really stands out, except there was one involving hypnosis that I remember from when I was about 8 or something. But not like Three's Company, where they are etched in my memory.
Timeless.
Yes.
Aging well.
Yeah. And even when they're not aging well, it's interesting to me the different ways in which they don't age well. There's the sort of baseline ways, and then there's the little kind of little quirks of the storylines and stuff. But what I find funny, and I think we just probably talked about this when I've been on the show previously, and I'm sure everybody else who's been on the show said the same thing, is, you know, I think we all at our age experience these shows mostly in syndication, so he's seen them all, like every episode, you know, multiple times.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Season 6, episode 23, and now here's Jack. It aired March 23rd, 1982, directed by Dave Powers, written by Martin Rips and Joseph Storetsky. Jack gets a chance to appear on a television show to cook and enlists Janet and Terry as his assistants. Kieran, what did you think of And Now Here's Jack?
Well, this is one of those episodes that is fondly etched fondly in my memory. I like this one. This one has a really great balance of the sort of the classic element of the physical humor and everything, and it's kind of a perfect setup. But it's also got, you know, his budding career as a chef, which is a bit of a latter day thing, which kind of kicks the ball down the field a bit in that way. And of course, it's got some really, really primo Angelino in it. And I love Mr. Angelino. That guy kills me.
You know, a lot of fuss is made about how Chrissy, you know, and the Ropers, those were the golden years. But I think these were the best episodes around this time period. These were really my favorite episodes. And even though this episode in particular isn't my favorite one, I do enjoy it. And I watching this again for the, I don't know, 75th time, it's still great. It's still great. And if you notice, it opens up with a fart joke, or a fart gag. Am I wrong?
I'm okay. It's been a few days since I watched it, and okay, I'm trying to remember. Can you refresh my memory? What was the fart gag?
Well, first of all, Furley walks in right off the top of the episode for no reason. Nothing is happening to push the story forward. He's just plopping in on the kids for no reason at all, sits down on the couch, is about to say something, and then just goes, oh, it's gas. and everyone laughs, and he doesn't burp or anything. It's just, I've got to assume it's like some sort of fart on the couch. That's how it starts.
How it is I don't remember that is bizarre. But because this has some great RF in it.
Yeah.
But this one for me was also like a really good example of how I think you and I are on the same page here, is that Terry's the best roommate.
Yeah.
You know, I genuinely think that they finally kind of got over the sort of ham-fisted approach of having, okay, well, the dumb blonde. And it's like, okay, well, this time we have a smart blonde. Yes, I mean, she's bumbling and all that, and she says things that are out of turn or out of character at times. But it's like, this is a good example of where she's as controlled a performer or character at the same time as is Jen. So it's a good 1-2 punch, I think, in this one.
The interesting thing with Priscilla Barnes was, I don't think comedy was her forte as an actress, but I always felt she was kind of playing catch up to John Ritter and Joyce DeWitt, but she was able to hold her own, I think, because they cast her as like the serious blonde, the smart, the smart blonde.
Yeah, it's weird to say this in the context of Three's Company, but she has more gravitas than Janet does in a lot of ways. Like,
right.
She has a little more range, because, I mean, Janet's always the sort of sensible one. And then she's also got this, Joyce DeWitt had this ability to do this like great physical comedy. But I think what Priscilla Barnes, her default was, okay, I'm going to be the voice of reason. And then just once in a while, she suddenly wouldn't be. But Priscilla Barnes' background as an actor, had she done like a real sort of mixed bag of like, did she do like horror or sort of genre stuff? I can't even remember.
I know she did horror stuff. But I don't know what her CV is before Three's Company. Really, I haven't really delved into it, but I do know that she was pretty vocal about not really wanting to be in Three's Company. Like it wasn't really her bag. You can kind of sense it, but I think she genuinely liked everybody on the show, and eventually she was able to, and eventually meaning these episodes here, eventually able to slip in and act opposite what I think were two powerhouse physical comedians by this point, was Joyce DeWitt and John Ritter. I mean, Joyce was able to do it, I think, just because she was around John Ritter, but by this time, Joyce and John were a fantastic duo.
This one has sort of the I Love Lucy element of having like the setting and the antics in this makeshift kitchen on the TV show and everything. Should we talk about the plot? Do we need to catch everybody up on what happens in this episode?
Well, let's see. I mean, Jack gets an opportunity to be on some sort of like afternoon talk show. L.A. afternoon talk show called, what was it called? L.A. Talk? I think L.A. Today.
L.A. Today.
And they all have stage fright. They enlist Larry to help them deal with it. He comes up with this cue card idea that they'll put it while Jack is talking about the recipe. There'll be cue cards for him to say stuff. And then, of course, someone mixes it all up before they go to tape and bang. You got yourself a misunderstanding Three's Company classic.
Exactly. And it's that simple device of, I guess, the stage manager or the director or the producer, whomever it is, doesn't like the way it's set up at the last minute. So he's like, get rid of this parsley. It's wilted, he says. And of course, the parsley has Jack's cue cards or his cheat sheets in it, and get rid of this. And it's like this, I want this moved over here. And it's like the pot of water that he has to boil has some of his notes on it. And then of course Jack always ultimately kind of has a hand in his own demise by deciding that it's a good idea to put his cue cards in his hat, in his chef's hat, and then that unravels. The way they play the broad stage fright is actually, you can see it coming. When they're sort of practicing, and they're obviously a little too enthusiastic, and their practices aren't very good, but when it goes off the rails, I love how it's bounced off this action going on the other side of the stage, where the host of the show is loving it. He's dying. He thinks it's great. He thinks it's great television because it's just so funny. And of course, Mr. Angelino is dying of embarrassment and is humiliated. So that's a nice repercussion.
Yeah, I mean, you could see it coming, like you were saying, the foreshadowing of Terry just going overboard, and then when they go live, she turns into a Barbie doll, and Janet has insane stage fright. She can't even look at an audience.
Right, she's just got her hair in her face, her hands over her face the whole time. Like it's like overboard stage fright. And it's funny too because up to this point, I think six seasons, eight seasons in? I can't. What
six.
Season is this?
Yeah,
six seasons in.
The end of season six, really.
And so there's never been any. I mean, I actually I don't think it matters that whether it's believable or not, but it's like, Janet's not the first person I would think would actually choke like that. She always, you know, traditionally on the show seems more in control. And likewise, you know, Terry acting like a fembot, a Barbie doll robot. It's so absurdly out of character. And you know, but it does just heighten this whole thing of like, this is what a television camera can do to people.
I think a lot of the, you know, how you're saying like Janet was the sensible one, especially around the Chrissy years. I think because Terry was, you know, kind of, I hate to say stiff, but sort of comedically sometimes, Janet ended up being more goofy near the end, I thought.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And here I think she kind of is as well.
Yes. And there's that great, probably one of the most memorable lines. This one, as I think I mentioned to you offline, there's that line where he's with a cue card stuck to Janet's butt. You know, when you have the obligatory sort of body humor, and he's reading off her butt, and he's talking about his poached salmon and aspic that he's making. And he's talking about the aspic, and he says, take it from me, this is a great aspic. While he's looking at her butt, where the cue card is, and then she reacts. And of course, like, I think he ends up running through a wall, and they have to cut it.
Yeah.
That, I guess I probably was, you know, whatever I was, 10 or something when I saw that for the first time. And it's just like, I remember that. I can't hear the word aspic without picturing that scene. Like, it just, and hearing that innuendo. And what's funny is, as I say it out loud, and I just thought of this just now, I'm very proud of myself for this, Danko, is that I just thought aspic, it actually works. It's a triple entendre now, you know?
Right.
The term aspic didn't exist in 1980. Three or 82, whatever, whenever this aired, but it you know, it gives it an added layer of innuendo now, you know, PIC picture, just to spell it out for everybody.
And then of course there's Terry's like, what are the measurements line.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So yeah,
it's so cheap. Like, this would have killed me when I was a kid. But watching it now, I was laughing out loud watching it. I think there's just something so perfectly boneheaded about it, and yet I felt so sorry for them. I really genuinely felt like they're just dying up there, and it's going badly, and they all had such good intentions, and it really jeopardizes his career. Like,
it does.
He gets fired. Mr. Angelino sacks him on the spot. But of course, the restaurant fills up with people who watched the show, thought he was amazing, thought he was hilarious, and are wondering where he is. And then he's quickly hired back and manages to negotiate himself a raise. That's a bit of a spoiler, I know, but you know, it always comes together. That's the great thing about episodic television, is it tends to come together at the end of the episode, 24 minutes.
Things work out for the kids in the end.
Yeah, now I feel like maybe we're leaving out. I mean, I already mentioned Angelino. He's high strung and manipulative and vain and fickle and everything else as usual. But he does such a great job of just projecting this manic energy on everything. That guy was great, and I loved his beard, which seemed sort of slightly like it gave him an element of like, well, this guy's not a complete square. This guy's not a total, he's not of the old school necessarily. Like, he's
from the beard?
The beard kind of makes him like professorial, but also at the same time, kind of like, this guy probably was maybe disco dancing like 5 or 6 years earlier. Like, he probably tried to be hip not that long ago. And so just the fact that he was a bearded character and not one of the more sort of, you know, when they have the sort of Three's Company go to older guy.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Stiff on the show, you know. Angelino's beard gives him a little bit of extra layer of I don't know. I'll say gravitas again because I can't think of any other word.
I liked Mike McConnell, the LA Today TV host.
Yes, yeah.
I thought he was gay. His real name is actually, they should have used his real name. His real name was Marty Brill.
That's so perfect.
Yeah, it's more of a Hollywood name than Mike McConnell.
Mike McConnell, that just sounds like somebody who, yeah, like that's like story written by, you know, like yeah. that's a screenwriter's name.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So or Marty Brill.
Or a priest's name.
Yeah. So anyways, like I thought Marty Brill was great, especially when he was like howling at the kids. So,
yeah.
And he got, he called Mr. Angelino, Mr. Augustino, my good friend. Near yes. dear friend of mine, Mr. Augustino. That's awesome.
Mr. Augustino of Augustino's restaurant. Yeah. And Angelino's just, Angelino!
But that's, I mean, something as small as that still cracks me up.
Another nice little turn is RF Furley offering himself up as the go to as the natural choice for Jack's assistant on the cooking show.
Sexy assistant, sexy.
Yes, his sexy assistant. That's right. just another little hint of how oblivious he is. Yeah, probably not giving quite enough credit to the small but valuable parts that both. Don Knotts and Richard Klein played in this episode.
No. Oh, and also we can't forget when Larry's giving some pointers, his sweater is fantastic. Oh, it's a brown reindeer sweater.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, this is like peak Larry. I think we're getting into sort of where it's not Richard Klein, it's the show where they can't pick a lane for Larry. So he's just you know, giving bad advice as usual, and then he's also then being like kind of serious or sympathetic, and you know, like I think the previous episode that you covered was where the kids were moving out, so they were gonna like go sublet, and just like Larry and Furley being hurt and sad about that. This is like where I find that it's like they decided to give Larry feelings.
He is, that last episode with that scene with Larry and Ralph Furley getting drunk together in the kitchen. I think that's one of the most classic scenes of the show. I've always liked that scene a lot.
I think when you get the chance to put those two people in a room together, like I love it when it just, because I mean, they're both so great. Richard Klein really is absolutely terrific. And it's like, obviously, Don Knotts, it goes without saying. And I love it when they just got to play off each other for a change and nobody else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what's so great about it. But Kieran, thank you for stopping by this week for this talk. I think we've covered all the bases on this episode.
If we are missing anything, I hope that somebody reaches out and tells us how we blew it. I encourage people to email you with their complaints.
Really?
As long as they're not.
You're inviting that into my life?
Not too hostile. I mean, let's keep it light. Let's keep it light, everybody. It's Three's Company. And if anyone doesn't like Priscilla Barnes, they're wrong.
Oh, fighting words. Fighting words. but come back next week.
I would love to. I will knock on your door in a week's time.
And that means there will be a next week. Like we won't go.
That's so pertinent.
I won't go on hiatus for another 4 months.
Well, at least not until after next week.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. Oh, we'll see you next week.
See you then.